Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Diane Taylor, author of The Gift of Memoir. Diane, you're going to give a two-hour workshop at the Spirit of the Hills Festival of the Arts on Saturday, November the 4th. Could you describe the workshop for us?
I start out with a definition of memoir and looking at a few examples, and then I go into the difference between autobiography and memoir, as we talked about earlier. Shortly after that, people have their first opportunity to write. I give 5 minutes to write about why they want to write a memoir, and this helps them focus on the whole process. And I do remind everybody that as far as we know, what they're writing could be fiction or nonfiction, and that's a safeguard. So it makes the group of us a safe place to tell their story. I go over various ways, maybe 15 or so different ways to start a memoir. It could be either their whole life or a period of their life, and they need to make that decision as soon as possible. And I also suggest a process of approaching memoir that many memoirs use, and it involves three basic archetypes, and they're Jungian in nature. And the first is the innocent. You start out your journey either the beginning of your life or the beginning of the slice of life that you're going to write about. As an innocent, you don't know anything about it. And then the second one, which involves all the episodes that you're going to write about, are the events and the obstacles, the joys and the despairs, as a seeker. So there's the innocent, there's the seeker, and then finally, with lessons learned, you become a sage. You have wisdom to pass on to others.
Yes.
So there's the innocent, the seeker, and the sage. Beyond the Pale by Emily Urquhart follows that.
Uh-huh.
It's in three parts. Also, They Left Us Everything by Plum Johnson follows that. And Eat, Pray, Love has three parts that follow that same outline. And then I go into how to write a good anecdote. One of the last things I do is give some memoir writing tips from one of Canada's best memoir writers, and I can't give that away, sorry. People who come to the class will find out.
Oh, well, that's very intriguing. So what do you hope the participants will take away from the workshop?
Well, many things, but the two most important, I think, are that their story matters, that it will shed light in the world to those who read it. And the other thing is that I hope, and it has happened several times, that people in the class will form a writer's group after and keep giving each other inspiration and motivation.
Yes, wonderful. So I know many of your students do go on to write very successful memoirs, and that you love to hear of their successes.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them get published, right?
Indeed.
And but do some of the others write for a different purpose than to be published?
Well, you know, I ask that in every class, and it's quite unusual if somebody says they don't want to be published.
Oh, is that so?
Occasionally, someone will say it's just for themselves to work out things in their life and as therapy for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But most people either want to be published by a traditional publisher or self-publish so that they have something concrete, something that has a front cover and a back cover that they can pass on to children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I assumed some of them would be interested in, most in recording their ideas for their families.
Yeah, that is true.
But what are the essential steps, do you think, for people to take if they want to complete a memoir?
Well, I think there are three basic steps. The most important one, I think, is just show up at your desk.
Right.
And make a date with yourself, make a commitment to an hour a day or 2 hours a day. Or Ronald McKay, who I read from earlier, He wrote every day for 3 months, and he was finished. And I'm not sure how many hours that was for him, but probably 6 or 8. That's a lot.
Yes.
But if commit to, say, either a number of pages, like 2 pages a day, they accumulate. And at the end of the week, you'd have 14 pages. At the end of a month, you'd have, 60 pages. And it's addictive. You see the pages accumulating. So show up, and then the second most important is to open up, just to go open up your heart and go deep into yourself, into everything that matters. And then the last one is to write, and write and write and write.
Yes.
Until
not
you
sit there thinking about it all in your head and not
quite,
writing it
quite
down.
Quite so, yes.
You wrote a short piece of memoir about your father for the new anthology we're releasing at the festival, in the anthology Hill Spirits 3. Why did you choose to write about your father?
My father played a very important part in offering me anything that I needed. And I owe a lot to him. And so to write about him is to honor him and to remind myself of what a great guy he was, what a great father he was.
Yes. Good. Well, will you read to us from An Irish Lament, which is the piece about your father?
Okay. This was a lot of pleasure to write about, by the way.
Good.
I'm Irish. That's the short story. My father's parents were born in the small seaport of Sligo on the northwest coast of Ireland. I never knew them. They both died before I was born. In fact, Dad doesn't remember his mother because she died when he was just 3, of peritonitis from infection after an appendectomy. His distraught father swore he'd murder the surgeon. Then at 16, his father died. At 16, my father was at the mercy of his own wits, of which he had plenty. Black wavy hair and bright cobalt blue eyes, large ears and large knuckled hands, Dad had a way with words. He always won the Scrabble games. He recited Tennyson and Robbie Burns at great passionate length. When I complained about a teacher, he cautioned me, "Learn in spite of the teacher." When I dedicated my first book to my mother, who was overjoyed for days, I was worried Dad would be jealous. But he said, while shaving one morning, "Never miss the opportunity to make someone happy." After my divorce, I was a very sad young woman. What can a father do? He sent me a letter that contained 3 words. "I love you." That letter is over 50 years old now, tucked away in my jewelry box. And there's the time Dad and I were visiting my friend Carol in the wilds of rural Florida near the Everglades. You should see the size and speed of the spiders, let alone the alligators. One night we were wakened by loud crashing noises in the brush outside the house. Carol ran quietly in bare feet from her bedroom and whispered that there'd been a lot of break-ins lately. What to do? How to defend ourselves? The cocker spaniel trembled and hid. Dad ran noisily from the couch to the living room, slammed a door, and shouted, "Harry, get the gun! Get the gun!" "Harry? Gun? You have to hand it to my dad." At some point, as a young adult, I began to miss having grandparents, that path back and back. There was no one to call Grandpa, not on my mother's side either, for he died before I had a chance to meet him, and her mother died while still in her 20s, when Mum was 5. In the absence of living ancestors, I longed for connection with my forebears, dead and buried. I felt the absence as a presence. It accompanied me like a melody droning in the distance, like an Irish lament. I needed psychic connection to those from whom I was descended. What were their dreams, their struggles? Were they farmers, plumbers, midwives? What was life like in Ireland? Why did they come to Canada? What were their stories? How would I feel by knowing them? Therefore, in my mid-40s, I recorded an oral history of my father's memories of stories he remembered of and from his father. We met twice a week for a month. I think we've run out of time for me to read some of those memories from early Ireland. But I'll just end with these last two sentences. Progressing into my dad's past gave me a deeper understanding of my father, of myself, and of an era. Bringing departed ancestors into my life expanded me. I walk accompanied by ancestral music and ancient wisdom. I walk accompanied.
Thank you so much, Diane. That was wonderful. So remind people of your blog address, though, so that they can follow your blog.
Okay, it's www.dianemtaylor.com.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's easy to remember. So information about the festival can be found on spiritofthehills.org, and a click will take you to the ticket sales page. If you'd like to take a workshop, maybe Diane's or one of the others, you can register for it and buy a ticket. More information about the events and the people involved can be found on our public Facebook page. Go to Spirit of the Hills Community Organization. It's a public page and you don't have to belong to Facebook. To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, www.wordonthehills.com. where all our broadcasts are archived. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. Thanks for tuning into the show. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7 Truly Local Radio.